as we draw towards the end of the year, we've certainly seen a variety of weather here on the Isle of Man across the last 12 months, including two red weather warnings, several named storms, and in contrast, a generally very settled summer where one weekend in July, temperatures soared into the mid-20s and the island's beaches looked like postcard scenes from those glory days of tourism. Well, fast am I. This is Ben Hartley on Manx Radio, and for the next half hour, I'll be joined by senior forecaster at Ronaldsway Met Office, Kirsty Wilding, to look back at some of the most notable weather moments on the Isle of Man in 2025. So let's roll back to January and the 24th day of that month when a rare red warning was issued as Storm Eowyn approached the island.
Manx Radio News at 7 o'clock. I'm Sian Cowper. A red weather warning for violent storm force winds has now come into effect until 2 p.m.
We go live to Ballasalla now and join Chanel once again. Let's just listen to that wind. Chanel, in the south of the island, you're at your house. I think you're at your back door. That has really whipped up in the last hour or so.
I am at the door, Ben. It really has increased.
One of the most noticeable factors, certainly from our viewpoint here, just on the end of the Cronkabody Strait, is the fact that an awful lot of people around the island clearly have been heeding the advice to stay at home if they can, maybe work from home. The traffic from the Cronky Strait, normally from about 6:30, 6:45 onwards, picks up dramatically, as you can imagine, as you get into the morning rush hour. This morning, next to nothing.
Well, let's hear from Kirsty now about the battering the island took on that day in January.
That red warning, which we had sort of 70 to 80 mile an hour wind gusts expected with it, but maybe up to 85 in more exposed spots. So violent storm 11 for the Irish Sea. And we did get a gust of over 80 miles an hour recorded at Ronaldsway. And obviously we'd also had Storm Dara at the end of 2024, which had given already some tree damage. But that extra strength as well, and it being a slightly different direction, really did cause some issues for trees and some damage, and obviously a lot of disruption for travel as well. They're really damaging those gusts. So, as I said, lots of branches off trees falling over, issues with roofs for people and things like that. So, yeah, there was an awful lot of disruption felt from that.
And it was really interesting because, as you say, a few weeks before, just over a year ago, we had Storm Dara at the beginning of December last year. And first of all, there's a perception thing, because actually for us in Peel, where we are, Dara was blowing northerly. So it was really, really coming in. I think Eowyn was blowing in a slightly different direction. So it kind of blew over the top of our house. So actually didn't seem as bad, and Dara blew so consistently, whereas I think with Eowyn it was more the wind gusts. On paper it was a worse storm.
Yeah, it was, and obviously that's why it was classed as a red warning as well, opposed to just being an amber like we'd had for Dara, because we knew that intensity of gusts, and obviously off the back of already places having had some damage only a month before and the plantations not having recovered from that as well, with it being in the winter, we knew that the impacts were likely to be quite large, and obviously highways and the DOI and emergency services had to work really hard to try to keep main routes open for emergency services through Eowyn.
And what was different? This came on a weekday, whereas Dara was a Saturday. And you sort of mentioned this when we spoke this time last year, that actually in terms of when these storms arrive, that does play a part in terms of the level of warning that you issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, if it's due to happen around the early morning rush hour, for example, which it was going to be up to that strength by then, that causes major implications. There's issues with buses, getting people to and from work, getting children to and from school as well. They tend to take the double deckers off the road, have single decker buses, and it causes a lot of disruption to people, and also for the emergency services, is if the roads are becoming blocked by trees, the less number of people they have out on the road obviously helps them to be able to try and maintain the network for, you know, emergency, like for example an ambulance to get through or something.
And you issued that warning, I think it was about 24 hours before the storm came. It was certainly the day before, so we knew everybody was ready. Of course, the schools were cancelled for that day. How closely at the Met Office do you work with the government and the various sort of agencies that keep the island running, the infrastructure?
So as soon as we issue even just an amber warning, we liaise with the emergency planning officer for the island, and we get involved with the tactical weather group, and we give them updates regularly as to what the forecast is, when is it likely to be at its worst, and then it gives the various agencies around the island, both government and emergency services, you know, the opportunity to plan in advance, make sure that they've got extra staff on, that people are aware, maybe open the control room at Ellerslie for highways, for example, and make sure the emergency control room is well staffed as well. So yeah, it's really paramount that we basically try and get the warnings out with as much notice as possible, because obviously at the end of the day, the warnings are there to try and protect and save lives and look after the public of the Isle of Man.
And just finally, for Storm Eowyn, it was the first time I think a red weather warning had been issued since 2018, was that right?
Yeah, and so that just shows really the emphasis on quite how rare some of these red events can be, and the reason for that is because we don't put them out just for anything. You know, we really feel that they have to be something really significant, and it is to try and capture everyone's attention, make sure they pay attention to it and take note of, you know, what the warning is for. At the end of the day, it's hopefully to protect lives.
So a fairly lively winter, no doubt about that. But moving into the spring of 2025, actually things really turned round, and sort of through April and through May, we had some really lovely spring-like conditions.
Yeah, we had quite extended periods of high pressure, really, even from March onwards. So that gave us quite calm, dry and mild conditions, and not very much in terms of rainfall as well. In fact, in March, we had the earliest that we'd ever seen maximum temperatures of over 15 degrees Celsius. So that was...
And that's high for March.
2012, yeah. So that was really sort of quite noticeable. The driest March that we'd had since June 2018's heat wave. It was the fourth warmest March on record, and then it continued, as you say, through to April. It was warmer and drier, still with plenty of high pressure, very few April showers. And overall spring, we were looking by the end of April with rainfall was down by about 50% over the previous 3 months of what we would usually see. So the beginning of May really continued that theme. The first 3 weeks in particular, we only had 0.4 millimetres of rain, so less than half a millimetre of rain in the first 3 weeks, and the sunniest May on record as well, with lots of sunshine. So spring did end up being the warmest and sunniest on record.
And as we went through May, of course, when we get into the month of May, all eyes move towards the end of the month and TT. And because the weather was so good, I can remember me and you and so many people sort of saying, well, this weather is brilliant. Is it going to last for TT? The amount of times I'm sure you were asked that question through May, because I think we were all thinking, well, there's no way this will last for TT. And I don't know what was going on with the weather gods at the end of May, because it was literally like turning on a tap, because it didn't last for TT, did it?
No, it didn't. I mean, literally as we headed towards the pre-TT Classic on the Southern 100 circuit, conditions just massively changed. We started to see unsettled conditions moving in, and that rain started as well.
I think it was about an hour before the first bikes went out at the land for the very first session. It had been glorious sunshine, and then just before the heavens opened, you couldn't have written it, or you probably could actually.
I mean, even by the end of May, we'd only had 23.7 millimetres of rain, but that's less than half the average for May. But basically, that all fell pretty much in the last week, because we'd only had half a millimetre before that. So, yeah, it did make for a very damp and wet end to May. And well, to be honest, that really didn't set the scene very well as we headed into June and for the rest of TT as well.
That's it. Race week itself wasn't great. Were there some sort of storms around the beginning of June?
Yeah, we did. We had quite poor conditions. There was gales, actually, on the night of the 2nd into the 3rd of June. So obviously not very nice conditions if you were camping out there, where you had any outdoor like gazebos and things up for the racing. But also we had quite a lot of rain as well, collected throughout all of June. So it made for pretty poor conditions really, not just for TT race fans, but also for everyone involved in the organisation of it as well. And quite a trying time trying to fit the racing in around the weather conditions and getting the roads dry enough to be able to race.
Yeah, had it been 2 weeks earlier, it would have been absolutely fine. I mean, what sort of elements conspired to bring such a prolonged, decent spell of weather through the spring?
I mean, ultimately, it's largely down to the jet stream and where the location of the jet stream is. And at that particular point through the spring, we'd ended up with it giving us more of an air of high pressure, and the lows being pushed further north. So we weren't really seeing them the same. So we got quite dry conditions. But that jet stream definitely buckled and shifted towards the end of May and into June, and it definitely gave us an awful lot more in terms of rain, you know, and wind as well. Like, you know, a gust of 52 miles an hour in the middle of TT week is not ideal.
And we know that for you and the team as well, when the weather isn't great during TT, you know, there's a lot of eyes on you. It becomes a much more sort of pressurised environment, because there's so much dependent on the weather and your forecast being as accurate and as timely as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, paramount, we want to make sure people stay safe. So especially those campsites, making sure that everything is sort of tied down really well if we've got those strong winds. Also, the ground was getting quite waterlogged in places for the campers as well. But also, you know, there's plenty of other events that go on around the island during TT as well, various festivals in different towns and villages, and everybody's wanting to know information about how the weather's going to affect their particular events. So yeah, it was certainly a challenging TT, quite a busy one for the phones, but obviously, you know, that's what we're here for.
You're listening to a special programme on Manx Radio, where we're looking back at some of the big weather events here on the Isle of Man throughout 2025. We'll hear more from Kirsty in the next few moments about the weather throughout the second half of this year. But first of all, let's go back to earlier this month, when the second red weather warning of the year was issued for Storm Bram. The red warning was for coastal overtopping. And on that day, the 9th of December, the island certainly took a battering. More from Kirsty about that shortly. But on that day, Phil Gawne spoke to Infrastructure Minister Michelle Haywood about the current situation regarding flood defences around the island.
There was a report produced about 9 or 10 years ago which identified all of the flood risk areas. I know in the previous government, I think something like 25 of the 150 identified sites had been dealt with. Is enough being done by this current government to effectively adapt to the change in climate?
I think we're doing a fair amount. So obviously the flood team has moved from being a Manx Utilities thing to being within DOI, and the team there are really dedicated. There are lots and lots of areas we've been flagging up with them. They've produced the new flood risk maps, which allow for climate change under the new predictions for climate change as well, which is really important because that gives us the long-term perspective on where do we need to be planning for. But I think there are things like Ramsey West Quay that, I mean, that's been in the offing now for God knows how many years. It needs to be delivered, and we need to be able to, you know, that scheme will protect over 500 homes and businesses, and it's so important. We've done significant work around Laxey, and Laxey's really been the poster child and where most of the focus has been, because the floods there were so devastating, and we've done significant work there. But there are problems working in the river because we can only work during those summer months, and so we need to time getting the scheme ready and going out to procurement and getting a contractor in place ready to work in that working period. And if we miss that working period, it doesn't matter if procurement happens in October, because we can't do the work at that time. And you know, you certainly you wouldn't want to be trying to work in any of the rivers when that big rainfall hits autumn through winter. And we've seen, I think we can track the weather data for the Isle of Man, there has been a significant acceleration in the volume and scope of the rain that falls across autumn and into winter. It is markedly higher than before. So actually, things that we've had in place for years and years, like the bridge at the bottom of Jack's Lane that has coped with the water flow through there, is no longer coping because the intensity of rainfall now is so much more different to what we'd originally been dealing with. So I think we're going to see increasing pressure on that. We do have the Climate Change Adaptation Fund. We are working through. That's helping us deal with the damage from flash floods and try and address some of these flood issues that we can predict. But I think it's just going to get harder to try and keep up. And I think you can see that a time where the department will be looking to strengthen that team to try and achieve more in the time.
Infrastructure Minister Michelle Haywood. And you can hear and read much more about this subject at manxradio.com. Well, let's hear more from Kirsty now about the weather throughout the second half of 2025. And first of all, a reflection on what was an excellent summer.
Yeah, July, it really felt like summer had returned. We thought it was all over in June, but no, luckily it came back. We had warm and dry conditions. The mean daily maximum for July was 19.5 degrees, and 9 days in July we actually saw temperatures above 20 degrees Celsius. So that's the same as what we had for the whole of 2024.
Well, compared to last summer, because, you know, summer of last year was an absolute write-off. You know, this was very different.
Yeah, that's it. And in particular, as we headed towards sort of like the middle of the month, the 12th, 13th of July, that really saw, like, you know, some of the best temperatures through the whole month. We had on the Saturday, we had 26.7 degrees, we had 25.7 on the Sunday. And so that actually ended up being the second warmest weekend on record for July. So the previous sort of record for the warmest weekend was actually the 13th and 14th of August 2022. But that weekend also coincided with Port Erin Beach Festival. So what better conditions do you need for a beach festival?
Yes, I mean, it was absolutely sweltering that weekend, and we were at Port Erin with Manx Radio, and it was like something, you know, when you see the old film reels of the island sort of way back when the tourism industry was absolutely huge, and the amount of people on Port Erin Beach that Saturday afternoon, you couldn't see a speck of sand. It was absolutely packed. So, you know, temperatures up to almost 27 Celsius. That's surely got to be pretty rare for the island to see those kind of temperatures. It doesn't happen often.
No, it doesn't. You know, our record for the island is 28.9. So it obviously wasn't record breaking in terms of the warmest day.
We wondered if it might be for a short time. We thought it maybe might just, but it didn't quite get there.
No, I think parts of the UK certainly did get it. But for us, that sea always keeps us just that little bit cooler. So we didn't quite see the dizzy heights that some other places did get. But yeah, on whole, the month of July, you know, it was the fifth month that we'd seen with below average rainfall as well, and the fifth month of the year with above average sunshine too. And I think everyone really appreciated that and felt that we'd actually had a reasonable summer.
You just mentioned the sea there. That obviously does play a big part in terms of why our temperatures never quite get as high as maybe sort of inland across the water. Just on a technical level, exactly how does that come into play?
Yeah, so ultimately the sea sort of helps to keep us a little bit milder and a bit warmer during the winter months, but it does also help to sort of like, or hinder us getting those, some of those like higher temperatures during the summer. If you go inland and you're somewhere sheltered inland in the middle of summer in a sheltered valley, for example, in the Central Valley, then, you know, if you're away from the wind, obviously you can see some really quite nice temperatures. But anywhere where you always have that onshore flow, it does always make it that little bit cooler. And likewise in the winter, then maybe prevents us having the same amount of sort of frost and air frost or ground frost that you could see in the UK.
And when we talk about record temperatures, are those the temperatures you take at Ronald's Way? Is it the measurements there at the Met
Office?
Yes,
that's correct. Yeah, our records at Ronald's Way go back to 1947, so a very long history of our records there. So that's why it's always really great to just keep that record going. But yeah, all of our official measurements, which are all laid out, and all the instruments are in the exact location of where they should be, the same as anywhere else across the globe. It means that the values can be compared really well across the world then in comparison to each other.
Yeah, I always sort of judge it by how many times we've sat out and laid out in the garden. And I think this year we did very well. It was comparatively, yeah, generally a very good summer.
Yes, I mean, summer continued on into August. We had the driest August since 2003, the second warmest on record behind 1995. And so, you know, we only had 23.3 millimetres of rain in the gauge in August as well. So great in terms of getting out for the kids in the summer and enjoying the summer holiday. But it was becoming a little bit more desperate for sort of growers or farmers that were actually in need of some water.
Manx Grand Prix this year, how did that fare in comparison with TT?
Because August was generally an awful lot drier, it wasn't anywhere near as difficult to try and fit it in. The only problem is obviously quite an intense schedule. So there's always something that will hinder it, whether it be weather related or not, or it's a little bit of hill fog on the hills or something. So there's always something to juggle. But on the whole, the conditions in August were definitely better than what we saw with those sort of gales that we saw in the end of May, beginning of June.
Yeah, the summer overall, I don't know what it was with the weather gods, but they did not want TT to go ahead as planned, did they?
It definitely didn't. It was, you know, warmest summer on record, but you wouldn't have thought it when you looked at the conditions we had for TT.
So from August, let's move to October, when we had the first named storm of the season. That was Storm Amy, and that was a fairly lively one from what I remember.
Yeah, so that occurred on the 3rd of October, and we had a yellow warning out for it. We had gusts at Ronald's Way of 68 miles an hour, and there was 13.6 millimetres of rain that fell at Ronald's Way as well, but obviously we did have more over sort of central parts of the island, and it gave like quite high rivers for that event as well, just for the amount of water coming down off the hills. But it also equally, because we had quite cloudy and wet conditions, it was actually the warmest day of the month as well. But overall, as we went through October, it was quite a dull month, and we only had just over 50 hours of sunshine, half of the average and the lowest on record for October. So yeah, it ended up being quite a cloudy October.
And as we move sort of through the autumn and now into the winter period, I think most people listening to us now will think certainly through November and the first half of December, certainly, you know, very, very wet conditions. That rain just didn't seem to stop. There were a few decent days in amongst it, but an awful lot of rain.
Yeah, those dry conditions through the summer months seem a very distant memory when we look back, for example, at November and even the beginning of December. For November, we had 25 days that were classed as rain days, so 176 millimetres in the gauge at Ronalds Way, in comparison to the average of 105. So it turned out to be the fourth wettest November on record.
And it felt like it, definitely.
It does, doesn't it? And also, you know, we really started to see some issues with surface water flooding for people as well, and very high river levels, and obviously that brings an awful lot of anxiety for people as well, based on previous events. So it can be quite difficult to forecast heavy rain events because you can get quite differing amounts of rain from low levels up over the hills. And so it can be then, you know, a bit awkward trying to work out where the impacts are going to be felt and when.
Yeah, it must be really difficult with rain to actually sort of really pinpoint it down.
Yeah, definitely. You can get such a range between Ronalds Way, where we take our measurements, and what we get over the mountain road. And obviously anything that falls on the mountain road, what, you know, is up there eventually has to come down. Our rivers are very fast responding on the island. It only takes about 20 minutes or half an hour to see the river levels rise, and so that doesn't really give a huge amount of time to be able to react to something as well.
And potentially what is the last named storm of this calendar year 2025, earlier this month, Storm Bram. Well, we had everything in terms of weather warnings there, Kirsty, didn't we? I think there was yellow, amber, and again a very rare red weather warning, but that was for coastal overtopping. It was all going on, wasn't it, with Storm Bram?
There was a little bit of everything thrown in there. And Storm Bram occurred on the 9th of December. The strongest wind gust that we saw at Ronalds Way was 74 miles an hour, which happened between about 4 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Quite an awkward time to get those strength of winds, because obviously it was kind of school pickup time and also people going home as well. So a lot of people travelling around the island at that point. But as you mentioned, it wasn't all just about the wind. Although that started as a yellow, we had upgraded it to an amber, the wind strength. But in particular, we had that red warning out for coastal overtopping. And in some ways, we were quite lucky that the event didn't happen 3 or 4 days before, because that was when we had the spring tides for the month. And that could have had even more of an impact with some inner harbour flooding as well. Whereas this was more the overtopping of waves. But just the amount of water and debris brought on shore, you know, and it makes very dangerous conditions around the coasts for people. And waves are lovely to watch, but it doesn't take much water to knock you off your feet.
And not long before Storm Bram, I think it might have been the day before, I think it was just a very calm period, because we were out and somebody said, is this literally the calm before the storm? And it was the same with Dara just over a year ago. The early hours of the morning, we were just coming home and it was very, very quiet. And you'd said this, it will completely drop away and then out of nowhere, the wind will just appear. I mean, is that a thing? Obviously a well-known phrase, but literally the calm before the storm, you know, scientifically, does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, quite often you can end up with a ridge of high pressure building across the UK. Quite often we then call them transient ridges because they don't stay around for very long, and you can see the next weather system coming in off the Atlantic. And that was certainly what we saw then. And, you know, just the level of the surge that we saw on the sea and the large waves combined with the gale to severe gale force winds as well, you know, just a really large amount of water and debris brought on shore. And I think we've seen quite a few videos around the island from different places, and particularly the south was quite badly hit, you know, Guernsey and Castletown Promenade.
And it's the cleanup as well, isn't it, of course, because Guernsey was shut for, I think, the best part of 24 hours while the cleanup was ongoing. A lot of debris came over and a lot of people have to work very hard to get all that sorted.
Yeah, you know, the highways guys work really hard to try to keep the roads going. But obviously when you've got coastal impacts as well and everyone's using the roads inland, equally there was still winds around as well and the gusts that were causing issues with trees and things as well. So it becomes a bit of a juggling act trying to balance what roads to prioritise and keep open and stuff like that to keep the island moving. But it was a bit of everything. And we had quite a lot of rain as well. By the time we'd got to sort of like the 7th of December, we'd already had more than the average amount of rainfall for December.
Just
as well.
A week. Yeah.
Yeah. And we've still obviously got quite a lot of the month to go.
One thing we've noticed about this year is this. Now, whether you like this or not, some people love it, some people hate it, but there, I don't know whether to say this too loudly, but there seems to have been a bit of a lack of snow this year. We haven't really had any sort of, you know, certainly not big snow days, a few sort of sprinklings and dustings, but nothing major in terms of snow throughout the last 12 months.
No, we had, if you can remember back right to the very beginning of the year, the 5th of January, we did have some snow. It was predominantly over higher ground, as we were always expecting it to be. And it's always a fine line trying to work out what height will get snow and what height you get sleet and when it will be rain. But certainly over higher ground, we had like blizzard-like conditions over the mountain road, for example. And so, yeah, that was an amber warning. But, you know, the number of people affected by it it was relatively low because of it being over higher ground.
Yeah, we've not seen really very much snow at all at lower levels this year.
No, not at all. And again, the only other time we've really had some snow was a little bit of a sprinkling of snow over the highest tops in November. But again, that was only really the mountain road that we're seeing. So yeah, this year, so we've got away so far without any significant events for snow at low levels.
If you're listening to us now and you're holding out for a snow day, there is obviously still time. And I think sort of on paper, it's more likely to snow actually in the sort of, was it January, February, March time of the year?
Yeah, typically for the Isle of Man, we tend to see these wet and windier conditions and slightly milder conditions through the autumn months. So October, November, December, we're more likely to see the colder conditions as we go into January, February, March. But yeah, it's fairly typical really for us to be in this sort of mobile, unsettled conditions towards the end of December, at least anyway, usually.
Well, Kirsty, it's certainly been a busy year. There's once again, as there always is on the Isle of Man, you know, every kind of weather has been thrown at us. But if you think back exactly a year ago, you were Kirsty Pendlebury. It's not just been a big year of weather. there's been a wedding to fit in as well, hasn't there? Because you got married in September.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, we got married on the 6th of September. So, it was a fabulous day. We were actually really lucky. Weather was great. And then it literally, the weather turned and went downhill overnight into the Sunday, the day after the wedding. And it was like someone chucking a bucket of water at the window. And would you believe it, 50 people arrived on the island and left on the island without more than a 20-minute delay to a flight, which you couldn't have planned.
That's not bad. They weren't smiling on TT, the weather gods, this year. But for your wedding, they hung on, didn't they?
I must have forecasted a good day for that one.
There you go. You just about got away with it, didn't you? Well, Kirsty, thank you very much indeed for being with us this afternoon. And we wish you and all the team at Ronald's Way all the very best for the rest of the Christmas period, and our very best wishes to all of you for 2026, whatever the weather may bring.
And I'm sure there'll be a lot.
Well, thank you very much to senior forecaster at Ronald's Way Met Office, Kirsty Wilding, for joining us on this special programme, looking back at some of the big weather events on the Isle of Man throughout 2025. And here on Manx Radio, we'll continue to keep you right up to date with the latest weather right through Christmas and into 2026. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. This programme will shortly be available as a podcast at manxradio.com. And coming up next on The Nation Station, we'll bring you another chance to hear some of our special features and interviews marking the 80th anniversary earlier this year of the end of the Second World War.